Good evening, I'm Douglas Bowles, and this is 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com, a weekly conversation with the interesting artists and thinkers of our day. You can find us online at 42minutes.com, and you can reach us by sending a message to mail at 42minutes.com. I didn't fall out of the tree for it, but I definitely feel broken. Thankfully, we have this moment to process what happened, and it's way bigger than one person, or many people for that matter. Actually, before we begin properly on this 129th episode this evening on the 26th of March, why don't we pause for a moment and thank the entire Treefort production team for bringing together and executing all this amazing in our town. And so I read from the Book of Fort, well, actually the awesome trail guide that Jason Sievers put together, to give my heartfelt gratitude to the individuals listed on the credits page. And so thank you to assistant producer Drew LaRona. Thanks to Director of Marketing Megan Stoll. Thanks to Director of Production John Betts. Thanks to Director of Art James Lloyd. Thanks to Volunteer Coordinator Elizabeth Corsentino. Thanks to Hospitality Director Stephanie Coyle. Thanks to the Curator of Ale Fort David Roberts. Thanks to the Master of Merchandise and many other integral things Lisa Simpson. Thanks to Artist Liaison Jenny Rose Larson. And thanks to Press Director Matt Daly. And especially huge thanks to Lori Chandro and Eric Gilbert. Well done, guys. This was the best one yet. Originally, I had one wrap-up show on the books planned for yesterday morning with another individual listed in the credits of the 2014 Trail Guide. Well, that went out the window. I ended up at the Extra Disco Doom show Monday night and was in no shape Tuesday morning for a normal 42 minutes. Incidentally, I spent 42 bonus minutes with Director of Art James Lloyd this morning, which I hope to bring you this weekend. Like I said, there was way too much to process. Please be sure to check out the interviews from our March Music Showcase that we did with some of the best bands at the festival, like Disco Doom, Magic Sword, Yvette, Saint Seneca, Story Grub, and Iska Doff. Yet, the person who introduced us to all these bands has brought them to us for the past 2 years now in such an entertaining manner. So thanks to you, Zach Voss, writer, director, filmmaker, producer, and entrepreneur. Mr. Voss lives and works in Boise, Idaho, creating films and developing video content. He's the director of Retroscope Media, LLC, which is a creative media production studio specializing in video services and filmmaking. Retroscope collaborates with an array of talent nationwide to produce original content for the web, broadcast, and cinema platforms. For the past 2 years, Retroscope has produced the awesome Treefort teaser videos, and their short film Mandrake Estate was an official selection at the Sun Valley Film Fest in 2013. The films they submitted to I-48 Film Competition in 2010 and 2011 both walked away with top prizes. More information about Retroscope Media can be found at retroscopemedia.com. We are pleased to have Zach with us this evening, and we are excited to get his take on everything that he saw and did this past week. Hi, Zach. How are you doing tonight?
Doing well, Doug. Thanks for having me.
You bet. This is great fun. Do you want to start with your work, or do you want to start with what you saw?
What I saw at Treefort, or
yeah, what you saw at Treefort. How did you do this festival in a big way, or are you a little more? Do you pace yourself?
Yeah, well, this year was the first time I got to attend just as a spectator, as a guest.
Oh, that's right.
The previous 2 years, I've always had a camera in my hand. I've always been coordinating or planning some other accessory Treefort event. And this time around, I felt like my contributions had arrived in full, and I just wanted to view it all come together at the end. So, this year is different and a little more comfortable, but no less enjoyable. So.
And so at this point on the Wednesday after the whole thing has happened, what is the one that stands out in your mind as, I mean, so like when I was talking to James Lloyd, that was the thing. There's a lot more than just music.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Hackfort was a really interesting addition to the lineup that was bringing together speakers and workshops regarding innovation and tech. So I got to see Dan Deacon do a presentation, and he's an electronic musician, but has an immense background and understanding about music and music theory. And I've seen him perform before, but I've never heard him speak before. And this was a really exciting chance to kind of delve into his mind and his process. And so things like Hackfort and Storyfort really just kind of provided another avenue to discuss and listen outside of a performance, right, outside of music.
And did you take advantage of Hackfort?
Yeah, so I went to maybe four presentations at Hackfort, two at Storyfort, and really enjoyed it. I think coming into it, Hackfort seemed to me like a little more of a technical side of things, which fell outside my expertise. But upon going there, I think the main discussion was about how all these things are related. What Boise means to the tech industry, what music means for collaboration and innovation. So it was a well-rounded discussion, and it always included something or some experience that I think a greater audience would have.
Wonderful. Yeah, I was too zeroed in on the music. And I, so after yesterday, the family went to a hot springs, and I was reading the trail guide, and I was looking at all the things I missed, and I just thought, oh, man, I can't believe. Did you partake in the yoga fort?
I didn't do any yoga, but I did drop in to spectate on a couple of the more live action, as they described it, events. So people were in athletic clothes, but more so like a casual dance party and less of a stretching exercise. But yeah, I think I definitely can relate to what you described about how many things you miss. Like, it will be impossible to do it all. You know, that's an expectation that you just can't have. And that can absolutely be frustrating, but it can also be a moment to just let yourself go and drift into the immensity that is Treefort.
I think unconsciously I was trying to keep up with Eric Gilbert. I saw him at a lot of the things. I don't have any idea how. I mean, I think he was staying out as late as it gets and then getting up early the next day. Did you happen to see any of the rig skit ball games?
I did not, but I heard that Finn Riggins and, was it, they competed against somebody, right?
I think it was, yeah, Finn Riggins. Well, there's Eric Gilbert, Delicate Skeeve, and another guy playing a wooden Indian burial ground, I think.
Oh, okay.
And I think the band is AAN, and basically they've rigged this basketball rim to the top of their tour van that they can extend and lower as they're driving. And so when they mm-hmm. park someplace, you extend it, and then you can have pick-up basketball games.
Yeah, and on one side of that van, they had a bracket painted that I imagine was the equivalent of a March Madness bracket, and they, I assumed, coordinated the various touring bands for this month and built together like a schedule.
They were playing real basketball, the game that I saw.
Yeah, right, but like painted on the side of the van, was a bracket, right, of different bands that I think physically met, played
right.
hoops on the van, and then struck off the loser and advanced the winner.
That's great.
But yeah, it was really clever. I parked outside the Lennon building, and I was definitely enjoying that vehicle.
Did you happen to check out Skate Fort?
No Skate Fort for me. I followed up online, and I think that's another way to try to make sense of it, try to experience everything as videos and photos and
right.
documentation after the fact. So I did watch the video of the performance that was coordinated under there, and I think that Into the Woods is the music takeaway show style video group out of Portland. I think they captured it, so I'll be looking for their edit.
Yeah, and you're speaking about the band dialogue where there was like 12 rock bands in a line and they were all playing in unison.
Yeah.
And it was pretty spectacular.
Yeah, so you were there for that?
Yeah, I went to that.
So how did that sound? I mean, you're under the freeway, you're in a skate park.
It sounded really cool. It was loud, but it was kind of one pitch, and then it would move up and down the line.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. It wasn't like musically particularly complex or necessarily beautiful, but it was definitely kind of sublime.
Sure. Yeah, more of a sound installation and less of a performance.
But there was a bit of performance because the guy in charge was conducting this huge rock band of rock bands.
Sure. Yeah, that's one thing that I'm really interested to see is that, the first 2 years of Treefort, it was a music festival, and most of the activity happened in the confines of a venue, and that was all great. People loved it. And now we're starting to see this overflow, and it can't be contained in the venue. And you've got off Treefort performances starting to occur, and I think that's really exciting.
It is. So there's one that I wish I would have checked out. I never made it over there, but the Apes on Tape showcases. Did you know about those?
I don't think I did. I don't think I did.
So there's that bar on Front Street called Woodland Empire, I think, and I think they were doing free music in there all day long.
Ah, okay. Perfect. Yeah, that's right in the neighborhood.
It's right there, and it's too bad because one of those things is if you happen to have a conflict and you want to see a band but you want to see another band, this gives you a second chance. So
Sure.
that's cool, but I never made it over there. I wanted to, but I never did.
Yeah. One of the things that I dropped by was a little house show in the Central Edition. This is kind of a neighborhood, a pioneer neighborhood for Boise that fell to the wayside with development. But the Fowler House, this is a jeweler, and man named Fowler. His home still stands. It's kind of dilapidated, but they were able to get permission, and they set up and had like acoustic performances in there, and caught a cellist, Jake Saunders, playing, and that was really cool. Just another one of those places where music is finding its way into.
Well, I heard of house shows going on all over town too. So I know that Sally Ford was playing shows all over the North End, I think, and then Iskadoff was playing shows up on the bench. So, it is getting it's like bleeding out of, even though there's so much to do. Did you go all the days?
I did. Yeah, I was there every day. I kicked things off on Wednesday night at Treefort Film Fest, at the Flicks, and then did Hackfort and music on Thursday, quite a bit of music on Friday, Saturday. Yeah, I think Friday night was my big night out, right? I did Magic Sword and Street Fever and who's the last band that closed us out over there?
Odessa?
Odessa.
Yeah.
Yes. So that was, dancing till 2:30.
Right. And then I heard, see, I was wiped out. I stayed for most of the Odessa set, but then I left. And I heard that the Slow Magic guy came out and jammed with them at the end for an encore. Did you make it to that?
I did. I was still there up in front.
You were
Pretty
up in
exciting.
front. Okay, yeah. And
Yeah.
that's pretty intense there on the floor of the Knitting Factory.
Yeah, I think by the time it was all said and done, that floor certainly showed its wounds from that battle. There's quite a bit of debris left over, but it was impressive, actually.
And what, I mean, so the, like Magic Sword is one of the acts that lingers. Like that was a really strong performance in my mind. How did you feel about it?
I thought it was good. I think he's always good. I really like his work. I think that his set is pretty locked in by now. So having seen him a few times,
Gotcha. Yeah, this was
it's a
my first
little
time.
it's familiar. Still good, but familiar. I think most impressed with Street Fever's set. He's got a light show that's synchronized into his keyboard array, and so the timing is just perfect throughout. So each song, there's moments that he's built, and you're guaranteed to feel those. He's from Boise, and that was a really spectacular magic store. It had a cameo from another musician, which was really exciting to see three, I'm not sure what the bearers of the sword are called, but I imagine that
the keeper.
Character.
The keeper is
The
the DJ.
keeper.
Yeah, and then
Okay, yeah.
The sax player, the keeper of the magic sword is the one that has the actual magic sword, and then there's the lead guitarist who was pretty awesome. I've got to say, he really made that show just because he was up there in front, and his lead guitar was pretty sweet, but the sax player was great.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a dynamic that I like seeing with electronic music, is being able to definitely follow the lead and see what's occurring then.
Right, and you know, that's the problem I have with some of the most electronic stuff, where I don't really know what they're doing. Where they're bouncing and they're spinning the knobs, but I really don't know.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
I appreciate the music, and
that.
I love Odessa, but I just don't know what the heck they're doing up there.
Sure. I can relate to. I went and checked out RJ Dichu's set, and I had never seen him before, and I kind of always just regarded him as like, oh, this is one of the best DJs, but I don't think I ever understood what his caliber of DJ meant.
I
was able to be backstage for that, and so he had four turntables live with a MIDI pad on either side and the laptop going, and just watching the mechanics of that show, watching how he engaged and faded and switched and used everything. It was stunning.
It really was. And I heard he did some awesome encores that I missed also.
Yeah, it's honestly a challenge to watch a full set, just because halfway through, you know, you've got another rotation kicking into gear, and then your mind starts to linger. And
well, if you're going to get into the next show, like I wanted to see Dan Deacon on Thursday night, and then I came out of probably the Crux, and the line went all the way down to 11th Street. It's like, oh my gosh, there's no way that's happening.
Right.
But every place you went, the music was good, so it didn't matter.
Yeah, that's one thing I definitely take comfort in, is that Eric Gilbert signed off on all these bands, so I can trust that.
I was really impressed with the locals. You know, like they were really solid. The local acts that I saw, I wish I would have caught more of the Shades show, but I was like wiped out that night. I think that was Saturday night. But they were really good. I mean, basically they were the headline that night.
Yeah, and Louie, who is in Shades, you know, he played in two other sets throughout the weekend, and so just what an opportunity for our local talent to just fit in all over the place and give it their all. It's really exciting.
Yeah. And so were there any performances that those are the ones that you're talking about and telling people? Or did you already tell me about them?
I don't think I told you any specifics. Are you talking local or...
Just anything.
As a whole.
What, you know, what's the one... The couple of the handfuls of like...
Yeah. I one of my favorite like kind of under the radar shows was at Crux by a band called Ned Garth Explosion. They're kind of like surfer punk, but they brought such a presence, such a interaction with the audience that I had so much fun. I mean, there's kind of a narrative element to it, to where when they were sound checking, they told everyone to take their seats, this is a sitting show, please silence your cell phones, and you know, they were just full of it, but they were able to play that up and really capture interest. And then once the show started, they had like a roadie come out with a pack of toilet paper and start, you know, keeping the whole venue and the crowd and the band and everything. So throughout the show, you're just kind of battling this ever-growing mass of toilet paper. And so that was one of those things, too, where I had never heard of the band before, but I had a slot to fill, and I said, I'll drop into Crux, and just had a great time.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, it sounds like, well, And you paced yourself, and you're not hurting today or anything, or the day before?
No, I did have to. I definitely had to pace myself. But as you introduced, I run a video production company, and so I had a pending shoot that needed to occur, and I was very clear that 3/4 weekend is off limits for production, and so 7 a.m. Monday morning, that's when that shoot had to happen. So I had to ease my way out of Treefort and quickly
on Sunday
turn
night.
back into
Yeah.
yeah on Sunday night and turn back into my alert professional self Monday morning for a 2-day shoot. So that worked out great, but yes, it's certainly, as you described, a ways down from the Treefort back to reality.
Did you see a lot of the films at the Film Fest? I mean, that's something that I really did not take advantage of. That I have kids, and so that's part of that. That I just end up, it's easier to take the kids down to the main stage and kind of hang out with the rest of the party moms.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And congratulations on the image that I think April had run in the Oregonian. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have the official licensed Treefort baby apparently now.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, it was a great image.
It
I
is.
think
It's a
it
great image. Yeah.
captured it well. Yeah.
There was one the day before in The Statesman, real similar, where there's something they like about the baby and those headphones, the ear protectors. Yeah. And,
Yeah,
we got people were taking pictures all day long. Can I take a picture of your baby? Yeah, sure.
That's great. I feel like that's something, too, that maybe helps translate what Treefort is to the outside audience. I think people who are involved in the scene in Boise, whether you're talking about music or film or art, everyone knows and appreciates what Treefort does. But if you're not kind of in that dialogue, you're not sure how it relates to you. So I feel like seeing a baby in a headphone kind of breaks down those barriers and lets you know how inviting and how much community respect that Treefort really deserves.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, no, and that's one of the things that I always stress, that this is the time where you get to hang out with all your friends. You get to go and you bump into people all over the place, and it's just so much fun. It's indescribable.
Yeah, I feel like my summary of Treefort, if I had to have one, is that Treefort makes Boise live up to its potential. And living here, everyone has something that keeps them here. Everyone likes Boise for one reason or another. And I think Treefort does a pretty good job of across the board bringing everyone's A game together for one weekend and showing what really can happen when everyone's invested in this community.
And it went off pretty much without any hitches, as far as I can tell. This was maybe the smoothest tree fort yet.
Yeah, I think in terms of the producing and organization, it appeared seamless.
It really did. I mean, so the first one was just such a shock and surprise to me. It's like, what is this? But it went pretty well. But there were, I heard some gripes now and again. And last year was pretty seamless too. But this one was just almost felt flawless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember talking with Megan Solwood one night, and I said, "How are things going?" And she said, "Really well. It's kind of concerned because there's nothing I can tell you that is like an issue." And then I remember seeing Eric one of the days, and he was sitting down and having a conversation and was not running around or figuring anything out. And so it's just like clockwork.
Yeah. And I guess like that's the idea, that if you've got the right people doing the things that they do well, you don't have to worry about everything. They've got it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think Lori, I remember reading an interview that Lori Chandra had done with Dina Oland, and Lori had made the observation that wherever Treefort needed a service or needed a talent, like the right person came to the top and delivered on that. And that's what is propelling Treefort forward, is that there are lots and lots of needs, and those needs are being filled to the fullest.
Well, it's exciting, and then We get to look forward to it again next year. Hopefully they made some money this year.
Yeah, I think I was charmed to see that the Statesman was speculating on their front page, like, if this would turn a profit, like, that's a story. And I don't know, I thought it was funny that that was the headline for it, but really that's the big question, right? Is like,
is it sustainable? Yeah.
And Boise, is it sustainable? You know?
I sure hope so. It's a lot of fun. And so here's the question that I've got for you. Which video series was funner to make? 2013 or 2014?
Yeah.
And which video series was more difficult to make?
Let's see. I would say there's so many layers that I could speak to for both of those questions, right? You know, there's so many instances within each series that could take the cake for either one of those answers. I would say that the stop motion was certainly a new challenge, right? It was a production technique that I pretty much have no experience in.
Did you have someone who had worked in that and help you, or did you guys just figure it out on?
No, so I basically had decided going into this year that I was very pleased with the results of the live action series that was Road to Treefort.
Right.
And in an effort to kind of continue to grow and develop the branding of Treefort as a whole, you know, I wanted to shake things up on my side and not make it look too much like my work, right? But make it feel like it belonged to Treefort. I had made the decision that changing the format in some way was a good idea, and arrived at stop motion animation being the format. And so I kind of just began a process of finding someone who already possessed the skill set, the raw foundation to work with me on that. And so I had a couple leads on a few people, and then eventually, just in a verbal conversation with someone, brought up Hutt Wrigley and said, I don't know this guy, but you should check him out. Found him on YouTube, watched his old stuff, and sure enough, he's a real person who lives in Boise and kind of, as a hobbyist, is doing really cool things at his house in the spare bedroom. But I brought him into the fold, and we worked out a relationship that kind of kicked off what became the Skyship Tour. I think largely we were still figuring those things out as the series progressed. And I think if you step back and look at it as a whole, you're going to see bigger achievements and stunts and effects that happen as the series goes on, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's the nature of when you're doing these videos for Treefort, is you've got hard deadlines that you have to meet with the artist announcements, and that you just got to make it happen. So there's not a lot of room for error.
Well, so how big were these figures? How many figures were there that you had to create to, you know, do the various animation? And then, I mean, what is that process like?
Yeah, so the figures are 12-inch G.I. Joe action figures. That's like the foundation for these characters. So the Treefort monster, you know, was crocheted and had its materials composed on top of that. An artist, Willow Socia, did all the set design and production design here. So that's like, that's the scale that we're basing everything off of. So the deck of the ship that they're on is built to fit them on it. The nice thing about working with G.I. Joes is that they articulate well. They have, you know, they're an action figure.
Sure,
you know,
that's really funny to say, though. The nice thing about working with G.I. Joes.
Yeah, that is funny. But yeah, they have a quality.
No, totally, I get
them.
It. Yeah, they articulate all over the place.
It is interesting to translate, you know, how you would speak to an actor, right? But now I'm speaking of an inanimate object, but I really am perceiving it in some sense as an actor. Like, what are his abilities? Like, what am I looking to gain from this performance? And one of those things is, you know, range of motion. And that's what he has. He's designed for war, so he can easily perform the gesture that we're going to be putting him through. The other thing is that there's a lot of other things that can kind of be scaled into that world and be believable, right? Both in terms of the existing prop and like toy universe that kind of has been built to that scale.
Yeah.
And then also just like everyday components that you can kind of fit in that feel like they belong. So the deck of the ship, Lilo sourced so many different everyday objects that just kind of fit in and you don't necessarily notice them, but they become believable as a part of that world, even though these are like, you know, raw materials from cabinetry and, appliances and all kinds of everyday stuff.
How, like, what kind of time frame does it take to animate each of those segments?
So,
like, just like the shooting schedule, like, is that an 8-hour day, or do you do, you know, you just work until you're beat?
Yeah, so, I mean, Hutt largely was the one in the studio cranking out those hours, and so I would definitely be sitting in with him, and I would definitely be setting up all the shoots, right, saying, like, here's what has to happen in this scene, here's what we need, but he was the one conducting that. And so I'd say that his average was probably about, he would get maybe 2 seconds of footage per hour.
And you said his name is Hutt. What? What's that?
Hutt Wiggly.
Hutt Wiggly. That's a perfect name for a stop motion animator, huh?
Yeah. I mean, when I was first on the search for Hutt Wiggly, I thought, you know, there's no way I'm finding anyone named Hutt Wiggly. But he exists.
That's great.
He's a very, very talented man. But yes, I mean, like, one thing that I had to learn with Hutt was that I would send him requests or build scenes very much as I would do live action, because for me, that was just a natural process. Like, oh, well, you know, we'll have this guy say this, and he comes in and does that, blah, blah, blah. But as soon as I'd say things like that to Hutt, like, he comes in, we've now established a second character that he's accountable for in terms of their placement and their gestures and stuff like that. And so I've literally like doubled the amount of time that he has to take to conduct it. And then I'll throw on another character and then a fourth character. And now it's not even a time issue. It's just like a mental burden because he is frame by frame carrying a performance across four different unique personalities and, having to make that believable. So it just kind of infinitely complicates things. And it took me a while to realize what was really happening. And once I did figure that out, I just was blown away by how much control and just how much range he really had, range of expression with an inanimate object and how to make them different and carry a performance. I was so impressed.
You take that for granted that, right, that these are just dolls that are being manipulated. They're not alive.
No, not at all. And there was one scene that I helped him. It was a more complicated scene with a lot of figures. And so I animated like a few background characters. So upon doing that, I mean, their movements were just like jumping around. They're rigid. It just looked like the doll was shaking or something.
Huh.
And then that's when I just had gained so much confidence in what he was doing is when I actually tried it and it just looked like it was just a mess.
Well, they turned out great. So good job,
Thank
Hutt.
You.
And great job.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, and it was definitely so many layers as I described. So, you know, we had Willow doing the production design. As the episode moved on, I definitely wanted to capture like a more rich aesthetic. And so with these landscapes, we had been compositing in the background digitally, but I definitely wanted the surface, the terrain that they're in to be material.
Uh-huh.
And so I eventually got in touch with Matt and Aaron at Edwards Dreamhouse, and they designed the the world, like trains in the latter two episodes, which was living material. So that the forest floor that they're on is moss, and there are dwarf conifer trees around there. And so that was all a living set. And that was just another little piece of it that I feel like helped in make this series feel unique and can be strong at,
a little on more its authentic. Own.
Yeah, this is finding all these places to put someone who specializes in it being responsible. Like, sure, I could have gone to the hobby store and got AstroTurf and laid that down, and that would have worked, but that's not the best way to do it. And I think having Treefort behind you when you approach someone and say, this is a project for Treefort, it's a big selling point, and it gets enthusiasm. And that's why I think I've kept doing it. It just brings out so much talent and means something to everyone.
All right, well, let's shift gears a little bit. You mentioned that on Monday morning you had to take the party off and then go back to work for a shoot at 7 a.m. What is this you're working on?
Yeah, so my company, as you described, specializes in video production. So creative agencies who might not have a robust in-house video production department will subcontract parts of their contracts with clients that involve video to me. So they'll kind of have the campaign already in motion, and then once the video part comes in, they'll bring me aboard. So that's what I was working on through Mitchell Palmer, and shooting some commercials, some broadcast commercials for Primary Health.
Something else that's happening that's interesting is I saw that this interesting-looking film called Mother's Milk made its Kickstarter, and that you are going to direct that.
Yes.
When does that start shooting?
We haven't set a date. I think tentatively it's going to be like late summer. This is through and through going to be an independent film, meaning that we will be seeking investors who kind of share our ambitions and plans for the project. And we don't have those investors yet. So this is all tentative, right, until we have our backing. But between now and then, Benjamin Morgan, the writer, producer, and I will be working closely together on kind of refining the script and polishing things and making it within the voice that I feel most comfortable directing, and beginning preliminary casting and location scouting and other pre-production things. So yeah, this will be my debut for a feature film, and I'm pretty excited about it. And I feel like I've had success in the short form platforms that I've been doing with web series or with short film. And at some point or another, a feature film was definitely on the horizon, and it just happened to arrive in this shape and form and be asked aboard a project that was already in existence. So I had to accept, and I feel real good about the concept, and I think it's going to deliver good things.
Yeah, and we're winding down, but do you think Mandrake Estate will be available as something that people can maybe get on Netflix or something like that? Can you get any of your films on Netflix?
You know, I don't know exactly how things arrive to Netflix. I think you kind of have to have some
studio,
a little more developed sense of distribution or representation, which I don't have. So while Mandrake won't be on Netflix, it was one of the incentives for a level of the Kickstarter reward. So people who back that certain value will actually be receiving a digital download of the film. And it did play at Treefort Film Fest.
Oh, of course it did, yeah.
So I think they'll kind of be like a staggered release for people from the Kickstarter campaign will receive a copy. And beyond that, I haven't decided exactly how that will work.
So, after Tree Fort's done, do you already start thinking about the next series of videos, or is that, too far in the future?
No, it's not. I mean, today I literally already, it was just brainstorming, but I already came up with a new concept for what I would want to do next year. It's, and who knows what will happen between now and then, but I mean, yeah, it's definitely something that it's too exciting to not think about.
Yeah, it's a fun project for sure.
Yeah, it's, and that's something that I owe to the production team actually for is they give me so much creative license and so much trust to represent them on this platform, and I definitely respect that and want to deliver, and I think that kind of relationship is what my company largely goes out into the market with, is that we have good ideas, we have the ability to follow through with those ideas, and the more trust you provide us, the better your product will be, and it's just it really kind of sets the bar for how I want to work creatively, and I get to do so in a very comfortable, nurturing space, and get to make content that people watch and enjoy, and yeah. So thank you for being a viewer and following this whole escapade. It feels good to know that it does strike interest to people, and that the long hours that we spend in our studios at night actually yield a results with an audience.
That was 42 minutes. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you, Doug.
You bet. You've been listening to Zach Voss on SyncBook Radio, a production of SyncBook.com. More information about the work of Retroscope Media and Zach can be found at RetroscopeMedia.com. For more information about the SyncBook, our guests, check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at 42minutes.com. If you like the podcast, please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website. And consider setting up a monthly charge. Thanks so much, and see you next year.
If there is one consuming passion in this country, it is with cars. If there is one consuming passion in Italy, it is with cars. If there is truly a dream car to satisfy those passions, the name it bears is this. Lamborghini.
Certainly wouldn't want to jump into it and drive it.